Hello and a warm welcome back to Braillecast, connecting the dots for Braillists everywhere. And coming up this time, we're talking in detail about Canute 360 and Canute Console. The sounds that you're currently hearing are those of Canute 360, which is rebooting for the first time, having been updated to firmware version 2.1, which was released just before Christmas. Canute has come up in conversation on this podcast many times before, but we've never really spent any time talking about it specifically. What is it? What can it do? And this new firmware update gave me an opportunity to sit down with Ed Rogers. Ed is also no stranger to this podcast, and as many listeners probably already know, is the managing director of Bristol Braille Technology CIC, who manufacture the Canute. I started off by asking him to tell us, in his words, how BBT would describe the product.
The Canute 360 is a project that we worked together with the Braillists on. We started it in 2012, and we started putting prototypes out to Braillist meetups in 2013 and 14. And this was a multi-line Braille display project, which became the world's first commercial affordable multi-line Braille display. So the Canute 360 has 40 cells of Braille, and that was because in those meetings we talked about, we all agreed when we were doing a bit back and forth about what we wanted a multi-line Braille to achieve, we wanted it to be able to show all the existing BRF files. That's why it has to be 40 cells wide. And it's 9 lines, because having just a couple of lines of Braille doesn't necessarily change the game very much, as opposed to having a single line of Braille. So having 9 lines enables you to start to see some paragraphs and more indentation and so on. So that's the Canute 360. It's an electromechanical Braille display project, which we built in close collaboration with the Braillist over more than 10 years.
Yeah, and it's quite a nice looking device. It's obviously rectangular. It's wider than it is tall. It's got 6-dot cells rather than 8-dot cells. And the space between the lines is just a tiny bit bigger than what you might expect on paper, isn't it?
It's 15 millimeters, and for comparison, that's fairly similar. It feels like similar to Interline, for those of you who have used Interline, whereas the standard is 10 millimeters.
And that actually may be a helpful thing for people who are perhaps a bit new to Braille and might want a bit of extra space between the lines.
It doesn't do much in the way of getting in the way of people reading, certainly. If you increase the space between lines too much, it can make it difficult to track vertically. This doesn't do that. It can be helpful.
And you say an electromechanical Braille display meant really in the electromechanical sense. I mean, it requires electricity. You have to plug it in order for it to work. So this isn't the sort of product that you'd take on the train with you.
Only if you're taking it on the train in order to plug it in a desk at the other side. Although I have actually used it on trains myself. You're right. It's a desktop device. It is for use with mains power. Everything about this machine was developed to allow it to be affordable. We didn't just try and create a device which did everything everyone could possibly want from a Braille display and then hope we could make it affordable afterwards. We were a small team, and we didn't work with the Braillists purely for fun. We worked together with the Braillists because as a small group of people in the Braillist and a small company at Bristol Braille, you have to work out in advance what compromises you want to make in order to bring something to market. And the Canute 360 we're very pleased with, because it's, I think, made all the right compromises and has resulted in a machine which actually costs about the same as a single line Braille display, just by having 9 times as much Braille. And one of those compromises, like you say, is no battery. There's no technical reason for that. It just made it faster to get to market so that we could get it out and people could actually start using it.
Yeah, and presumably it made it lighter, and it made it so that there was more space for Braille components, so you weren't increasing the size.
It did make it a little bit. So yes, the big thing actually was certification. So it's expensive to get products certified, and batteries are much more expensive to get them certified and complicated, so it takes a lot longer. And like I said, we really wanted to get this out to market because people have been talking about multi-line Braille for decades. Fundamentally, what we wanted to be different about the Canute was we wanted it to be real. We didn't just want to show someone one display and say, look, we've built this, and then to take it around for 4 years, showing lots of people, and then just quietly shelve it or make it only available to a few universities, or have it on our website and say it's available for pre-order forever. And none of the projects that have done that in the past have done that with any ill will. It's just that if you don't develop from the start knowing that it is going to be really hard, and you have to make sure that the first priority is making it affordable and real, then you won't actually get the point of releasing it, because this is a tough market. And it's not tough because of the competition. There is competition, but it's tough because it's a really complicated thing to build. And as everyone knows, it's still expensive even after you make compromises. And Braille, you need to fight for Braille itself. You can't just say, here's my product, it's the best at doing this. You have to spend two-thirds of your time explaining to people why Braille is important at all.
And then that creates challenges for getting money and keeping the product sustainable.
Yeah, and even within accessibility, sometimes you need to persuade people that Braille isn't in terminal decline.
So what we have on the market now, and has been on the market for a few years now, actually, is, as you say, 9 lines of 40 cells, multi-line Braille e-reader that can read BRF files. And there's various other integrations that we may come back to later on, but its core purpose is to read BRF files. And it's been distributed and people are liking it, but there's been a few complaints about it. And there's a firmware update that's coming out that's going to fix a couple of those. Why don't we talk about those? It's going to make it quieter. And I think there's a few other things. So why don't you just talk us through the headlines of this new firmware, and then we'll explore some of it in more detail.
Yes, we haven't actually released new firmware for a long time, not since the start of the pandemic. And that was just for reasons I won't go into now. It was hard for the company to be able to get a new firmware released. There's a lot of testing you have to do. So this is a lot of changes we wanted to make for a little while. And it's a very conservative change, actually. The two core ones, like you said, are making it a little bit quieter. The Knut, for those who haven't used one, when I said electromechanical, I mean, it sounds like it's electromechanical. It's not as noisy as, say, an Index Embosser or a Perkins, but you certainly hear it. We've reduced that noise level down. It's still not silent. It never will be, and it was never intended to be a silent device. In future, we may be able to make it quieter again. We may be able to make it a bit faster. We've broken the logjam of getting a new firmware out now, so we can start to see what people think about it and maybe more updates in the near future. But the other feature you mentioned, this is the way of handling files. So to date, it's just been a flat list of files. And that made sense when we released the machine. It's been a long time in coming, though. We've always meant to support folders. We're doing it a little bit differently to how you might expect. And this is because, although we are, of course, manufacturers, we are a commercial company, we do like to experiment, we like to play around, and we like to get people's feedback. So what we've done is we're doing a tree view of a directory system. So if you've got, say, the RNIB library card in there, it opens up a tree view, meaning you will see the folder name, and then underneath that, you will see the file names indented in to show you they're within that folder. And then in that, if there are any other folders, that will be indented, and any folders within that will be further indented. So it's a way of seeing the whole outline. Now, this is just the first version of this. We're making a change, and we want some of our customers to try it out and say, actually, I would like this bit to be optional. I'd like to be able to change the way this display works. And that's what we're looking forward to receiving from customers.
The tree view concept sounds intriguing. It also sounds like it could get quite messy quite quickly. If I look at, for example, the RNIB SD card, I start off with a folder called Books. Inside the folder called Books, I've got a folder called Adventure. And inside the Adventure folder, I've maybe got 48 books just in the Adventure folder. And that's way bigger than 9 lines. So if I want to get past the Adventure folder to the next folder, or even if I want to get past the Books folder to the next folder down, what happens?
You pan forward and you get a note on the top of the screen which tells you how much you'll need to pan forward, and you can press forward by that amount. One thing I do want to emphasize here, though, is that we are making, like I said, a conservative change. So what we decided to start with, not because we think this is the end state that we need to be in, because I want to continue to develop this. We currently, we're showing all the files as a flat list. Then we're moving for this to showing them in situ, so you can see where they are in the structure. And we want to hear from people using that to say, okay, well, this is an improvement. As a result of this, I now want to be able to do this by pressing this button. So I want to be able to close this folder down by pressing this button. And we started developing those extra features so that you can close this directory or that. And we realized that until it's been used in anger, we'd just be making an arbitrary choice and people would want it changed anyway. We'll be taking it to events, we'll be trying different solutions out, and we'll implement the things that work best. So it's a bit like what we used to do. People don't have to use this firmware if they'd rather wait. We give something out, it improves things, and people tell us what they would like to see changed or added in as a new feature in the next one.
I quite like the idea of it. What I was thinking it might do actually is just show the root directory, and then you press a button on the folder of the root directory, and then it expands that folder. So then it shows the folder above that and then the files underneath.
Yeah, and that's certainly one of the ones we've played with. But meanwhile, it's a good compromise between being able to see a library in a much more practical sense without being that big a change for people who have gotten very used to the Knut as it was and are not necessarily that experienced at navigating file system.
How does it organize the files in the tree?
Alphabetically. That, of course, is the easiest change to make.
And if you could hazard a guess, I mean, let's say you put the RNIB SD card in and you know it's got 6,000 books on it, and you know that actually where you want to be is probably about book number 5,000, and 5,000 divided by 9 has got to be about 55, 60 pages on maybe. You can presumably go to page in a book and you can go to page 60. Can you do the same in the library?
You can't go to a page in the library. The natural way to do that would be to hold down until you get to the letter you want.
But I can hold the forward button down.
Oh yeah, it moves through fast enough.
And I mean, it's quite incredible, really. You could foresee it getting to a point where it actually remembers on a card-by-card basis what sort of tree layout you want.
It always saves your data to the card, not to the device itself, because it's assuming that this device may be used by multiple people. So if you wanted multiple cards, any changes to layout would always be saved to that card specifically.
What are we actually looking at in terms of timescales? If you've got enough feedback to be able to make a change in 3 months, are we going to get a change in 3 months, or are we going to be waiting another year or so? Or what are you sort of envisaging at the moment?
Small changes could be rolled out very quickly. How easy it is for us to get it out to everyone so everyone has heard about it is actually much more of a challenge, because we aren't the primary distributor for the Knut, we're the manufacturer. So if we roll them out every couple of months, we might end up with people, you know, missing them. That's totally fine. Each upgrade works on all the old machines.
And speaking of the distribution challenges of firmware, the Knut doesn't have any active Wi-Fi or anything like that in it. So how does one go about updating their Knut?
Yes. And for context as to why, it has no technical reason it couldn't. In actual fact, I think it has a deactivated Bluetooth and wireless module on the Knut inside. The reason we chose not to is because we wanted to make that device as simple as possible, as clean as possible for us to support, for us to be able to say, this is what this device is doing. You may prefer it to be a more complex device, but what we can guarantee is that we know how it works in this state and we can help you get it working. And in fact, we find most people find it really easy to work with. Back in 2019, when we were looking to release this, I remember having nightmares about imagining trying to walk someone through typing in a Wi-Fi password on the Knut. So that's why we didn't end up doing that. But we ended up with a very straightforward way of doing upgrades, which is you download files from the internet, you put that on a SD card or a USB stick, and then when the Knut turns on, it looks to see if that file exists. If that file exists, then it does the upgrade.
And it takes probably, what, 10 minutes or so?
It depends on which upgrade you're doing. So some of the previous upgrades have been as little as 5 minutes. This one, I think, is more like 20 minutes, because what it's actually doing is upgrading the entire operating system in the background. That's not of interest really to the end user, because it doesn't functionally change anything. But it was necessary for us to upgrade the whole system in order to be able to make these changes.
Sure. So you're going to want to make sure you've got access to a power socket and that's going to stay on for 20 minutes while you run the software update. It's not something you're going to want to do in a sort of mission critical environment.
Do not to do it immediately before a demo. And also, like I mentioned on the train, if you are using it on a train, something like that, do make sure that you're on one of those, a train which has constant power supply. Sometimes they go over a bump and the power just cuts off.
And what happens if that happens? This is a trip back to the service center, I guess.
It depends at what point it happens. Whilst it's upgrading, it will create a shadow version, a new version of the operating system, but leave the other one in place. And then only once the upgrade has been tested and certified completed does it sort of flip them over. Short version is no, it shouldn't corrupt the Knut if the upgrade is only halfway through when the power cuts out. But it is always possible. One thing to note is that once you've done the upgrade and you've tested it, those files do need to be removed from the card, otherwise it'll do another upgrade. And that was just in case someone is interrupted. We didn't want to remove the files, so there you go.
Well, and it's also useful if you've got a batch of Canutes, if you're a distributor or something and you need to update a load of Canutes.
Yes.
You've talked about refining directory trees. I'm looking at Canute and realizing that it should be able to support all of the BRF files from RNIB reading services. It may not support BRF files that are longer than 40 characters. There might be some wrapping issues with BRF files that are shorter than 40 characters. It doesn't support Word files. There's a lot to be done with screen reader support. The list kind of goes on with these sorts of products. You open a Pandora's box. What's on the roadmap that you can tell us about?
All of the above things that are not supported or are supported one way or another are all deliberate decisions. So the reason we've chose 40 is because almost all BRF files are 40 or less. There are some that are 42. If it's 42, it will still show. It's just that any cells that are over that 40 line will not show. We asked around a few different, and we couldn't find someone that said that they were producing files at 42.
What sometimes happens, and what I've encountered in the field, is that sometimes a Braille note taker, like a Braille note touch or something, you might export a BRF file for use on, say, a Canute or another refreshable device, and it doesn't insert any line breaks, so you have a big, long line.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, that should be called a BRL file, really. That's just a poor naming, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's as maybe, but still, the Canute doesn't handle that very well.
Yes, so that comes to our next deliberate decision. We want to show formatted Braille files, and something which hasn't been wrapped has not been formatted. And so the multi-line benefits of something with no line wrapping are comparatively lower. So it would be very easy to be able to wrap that. It was just not a decision we took to make. And it hasn't actually come back to bite us too much. Certainly not when it comes to libraries.
Are you keeping up with the eBraille standard from the DAISY consortium? Is that something that might be on the roadmap in a couple of years' time?
We will support the format which good quality formatted Braille is produced in. I don't see BRF going away anytime soon, but doesn't mean it won't eventually. And doesn't mean people might also start to include eBRF. And so we'd be perfectly happy to support that as well. We do support portable embosser format, which is kind of like the precursor to this, the last attempt to update from BRF to a more semantic form.
Just going back, presumably, a page on a Canute is 9 lines. If you want to go to page, and just to fill people in who are wondering how on earth you go to page, down the left-hand side of the Canute, there's a button next to each line, which is a numbered button. So, and then there's a zero button. So you can press the go to page button and you can use the numbers down the side to go to page. What happens if you have a BRF file that's, say, 25 lines of 40? So page 1 is obviously lines 1 to 9. Page 2 is lines 10 to 18. Page 3, is that lines 19 to 25, or is that lines 19 to the second line of page 2?
It's the former, if the author has created a form feed in there. So if it's been properly formatted at 25 lines, then it will break and you'll have blank lines at the end of that.
So this is very helpful, actually. So if you want to go to page 25 in your book, then all you need to do is multiply that by 3. So on the Canute, you're going to page 75.
Yes, and we did consider having a navigate by BRF page as well, but it just didn't come up in actual requests that much because it, of course, would vary according to the book and would usually just be 3 times the Canute page anyway, which is kind of a duplication of features. And we wouldn't know what to do in those instances where BRF file hasn't got form feeds in it. Because the BRF format is so limited, we actually create for every BRF file a shadow of that file, which is an editable text file. I think it's called something like Canute dot, and then the name of the file, and then .txt. And it's called .txt specifically to encourage people that they're able to open it up on a computer, to take the SD card, put it in a computer and look at it. And that stores the page you're on in that file. It also stores bookmarked pages. And that can be quite powerful because that means that if you wanted to add semantic information about, for example, chapter headings, and you knew which pages those on, you could add those in on a computer by editing that text file and then distributing that version out to the 5 or so Canutes you're using in your organization. And then they'd all have the right chapter headings that you can skip to using the bookmarks feature.
And are those bookmarks named or are they just numbered?
In the text file, they're just numbered. When you're looking at them on the Canute, the name you get is the first line.
Tell us about Word documents and PDFs and where are we at and why are we not at it already and what's going on?
That comes under the same category as when I was mentioning we wanted to make something that was as simple as possible so that we knew we could support it well. It is not hard necessarily to do a conversion of a Word file or a PDF and show it on a Canute. What is hard is to get it right in a way that isn't frustrating, in a way that has good Braille standards, in a way which has an up-to-date version of LibLui. One of the things you want to know is language and Braille grade, and that becomes something of a user interface challenge to make sure we get that right. I know this is something done by lots of Braille display companies. We're a very small Braille display company, so we want to make sure that we didn't rush something out and that it would be a nice interface and it wouldn't clutter what is otherwise a very clean interface. Nice big help button on the top left of the machine at all times. If you bring that translation onto the Canute, it becomes a little harder for users to configure it, to update it, and that sort of thing. And that's what we just weren't confident in doing then when we did our initial release. It has the potential to do more. That's why it's an open source device. Anyone who's tech savvy is very welcome to add that features in. We have never said we won't do it, but that's just why we did it, because it was considered as a formatted Braille reading library, if you like.
So at the moment, the rule is if you have a Word document, you need to run it through a Braille translation tool on the computer. One of them, of course, is Duxbury. And this kind of leads us on to the Canute being a terminal, because I think you can, in fact, wire up a Canute to Duxbury now and have Duxbury send the data straight to the Canute. So you don't have to save it as a BRF file. It can just go straight in.
When you're using DBT, there is the source view and the Braille view. And Duxbury have released support for the Canute so that when you have a Canute plugged in, the Braille view window will be reflected on the Canute. And that saves quite a lot of paper, as you can imagine. It's one of the things that people have asked for some time. And we're very pleased that Duxbury went ahead and added that. It's one of the most obvious use cases for the Canute as a transcription tool for checking.
And it works very well, because if I find a mistake on line 6, I can go to line 6 and I can correct the mistake, and only line 6 refreshes.
Yeah, it's not printing out to the Canute. It's a display which is refreshing each line when it needs to be refreshed. Because something that, right back to the start, for people who aren't familiar with, the Canute has hard Braille. That means it's solid. You can't compress it at all. It's like signage Braille. And it means that once it's set, it stays there.
And of course, if it's got 9 lines, it's got to refresh all of those 9 lines, and it doesn't refresh them in parallel, it refreshes them in series. So being able to refresh only one line at a time, there's a huge speed advantage there.
And that's all done thanks to a piece of software called BRL API, which is part of BRL TTY. And the driver support for that has been around since early 2020, I think, or maybe mid-2020. So for anyone that wants a screen reader that supports running from the command line, that's Braille TTY. Now, of course, the obvious question after all of that is, but what about normal graphical user interface programs? We are hoping to have a driver for NVDA soon. One of the people who's looking at distributing the Canute has put together a prototype of that. The real barrier has always been that screen readers do not know what to do with multiple lines. So, for example, on Linux, the built-in screen reader, it's called Orca. It automatically already now, without the developers having to do anything about it, supports the Canute because it uses BRL TTY. But in many applications, in most graphical applications, it doesn't know to do anything other than the first line. In some, it does work in multiple lines. So for example, in a text editor, you get the full page, even in the graphical text editor. But it doesn't work on everyone because the application and the people that wrote the screen reader didn't know there was going to be more than one line.
So you can tell it that it's a line of 360, and that might sort of work, but then you get very disjointed text.
The way BRL TTY works is it doesn't wrap.
Okay, so you really are just going to get the top line. And I think, as much as you say, screen readers don't know what to do with multi-line Braille displays, actually, I think the problem goes one step back even than that. I don't know that users really know what to do with multi-line Braille. I mean, you know, let's talk about text editors for a second. Okay, do you really want 9 lines of text to show on your multi-line Braille display? Or do you actually want 8 lines of text plus the status bar? Or do you want 7 lines of text plus the title bar and the status bar. And when you get to a table, you know, how do you want to deal with that? Because you've got to be able to pan the table left and right if it exceeds 40 characters. Do you want to lock the column headers in place? Do you want to lock the row headers in place? And what are the implications? There's a whole host of stuff.
Well, that takes us to the Knut console, because I've been playing with precisely, in fact, all of the things that you have been talking about. The Knut console has some similarity to the L Braille in that it's a computer with a monitor and a pull-out keyboard into which you plug the Knut, and then you have the Knut as a flat surface, and immediately above it, at right angles, of course, is the visual monitor, and the two are reflecting the same amount of information. Of course, it depends on which Braille code you use, whether they line up or not, but you can have the same information, you can have the same formatting on both, and one can refer to either. So you can have someone who is visually impaired but doesn't read Braille working with the high contrast monitor with someone else who's reading Braille, or a sighted student working with a blind teacher and two colleagues, etc. That's primarily used from the command line. It's a Linux workstation, that device. It's meant for expanding computer science opportunities. And we're, as a result, playing with especially text editors and tables and what you do want to show and what you don't want to show. And it is a very interesting question. So from the command line, I've been using text editor called Micro, because it's just like Notepad. It's got all the same conventions, all the control C, the control V, and so on and so forth. And there are lots of things that you might have thought you'd want to do in one way with a multi-line Braille display, but actually using it, you realize, actually, no, you want to do it something else. So one of the things I was worried about, because like you mentioned earlier, the Knut refreshes sequentially. That sounds like it might be a problem when you're typing text, because if you're typing text on the top line, it's going to be overflowing all the other 8 lines. It's not actually a problem at all, because you keep your hand on the top line. It doesn't necessarily matter what's happening on the next line until you get to it. And if you're refreshing, because it refreshes from the top down, it refreshes the first line that changes before it goes on to any others. So if you keep making changes, it will keep refreshing that line and won't get distracted and do the rest of the page. An interesting one you didn't mention, but it actually comes back to this idea of columns, is do you want line numbers? And the answer to that is yes, in some instances, of course, but only if that column of line numbers is a fixed width. Otherwise, it's going to refresh every line just in order to pad the line numbers out, because you've gone from 99 to 100. And now it's one column wider, so it refreshes the whole page. It's getting very technical, but you can see that's something I hadn't possibly occurred to me before I did it. Do you want a status bar? Probably. Do you want the status bar and the line above the status bar, which tells you a little info about whether you've saved or not, and the title bar? At that point, you're starting to waste space. Tables are a really interesting one, because I've done a lot of experiments with them, but I've not actually used that much in the wild, and I haven't distributed the stuff that I've been playing with to our customers yet. And the reason it gets a little complicated is because I think when you're showing a table, you don't want it to look like the visual table. You want it to be reformatted to proper Braille tabular standards, like the banner standard, something like that. And that means it needs to be reflowed to fit as much information as possible on the Braille display. So even if you only go forward by one, it might want to reflow the whole table. I've ended up with fixing the headers, but I couldn't quite make it work for fixing the column. Obviously, technically it can work, but it just didn't quite feel right. But all these things, a customer, when they get to the Knut console, they can try it themselves. They can modify any code that I've left on there, but it's an open device, so they can write their own from scratch, or they can download someone else's and use that.
What do you do about the cursor?
We use a control built into BRL TTY, which sets the cursor as being one of a number of characters. So it can either not be there if you wanted to hide it. It could be a block, which is all 6 dots. It could be an underscore, and so on.
So if the cursor is a block, let's say you've got Ed written, so you've got E and just an E and a D, and the cursor's on the letter E, that would presumably mean you've got a 4 sign followed by a D. And so you would need to then move the cursor right to see what was underneath the cursor.
Yeah, and because that's a quick move, that's something you can just move the cursor around and feel it. You don't have to wait for that, because that refreshes instantaneously. And when the Knut is mounted into and has become part of the Knut console, it's now a Braille display, and those face buttons, when you're in, for example, a text editor, they become line routing buttons. It's relatively straightforward to change those, add some new ideas in. That's the solution we found works best, because the Knut is 6-dot Braille. Even if you had 8-dot Braille, you still end up with the same issue if you actually wanted to use the dots 7 and 8 for anything other than the cursor. And there is, of course, the same issue for sighted users finding the cursor. If you're using a non-blinking cursor, for example, in many command line applications, then you get a similar issue.
So we've talked a lot. This has been a very candid interview, and thank you for your candor. Let's just talk about what the current state of play is now. So starting with Canute console, because it's a fairly simple answer. There's not many of them, and you're not intending to make many of them. Is that a fair assessment of the situation?
The first part's fair. Second part isn't. We are looking on making a lot of them in the very near future. We are looking at expanding, but we want to do this gradually. We are doing another pre-order. We had pre-orders for the Canute console when we first launched it in, I think, February 2023. And we've improved on our knowledge of how the console is best used, and we'll be updating the operating system. Obviously, all the updates will apply to all our existing customers, who are the ones who let us get here in the first place. So thank you to all our pre-order customers. The reason we're doing limited batch runs at this stage is because we're doing a lot of speaking to the people who have these machines. I spend hours talking to people. We'll be having phone calls if you want to, or just emailing us, finding out what they're going to use it for, finding out if they're going to need some customization, trying to make sure that when we have a development plan, it includes something for each of the people that have bought one. And that sounds quite excessive, but it's essentially the route that successfully brought the Canute to market. And we're now doing it with the Canute console, and we're doing it whilst actually releasing it a bit earlier. We're trying to scale up in a responsible way where we can listen to all our users, especially in the early days. Multi-line bail before the Canute was not really something that you just saw individuals being able to own. We're now at the stage where those individuals are being invited to set the use cases for Braille, and that will go on for the next decade or so.
And what about Canute? Obviously, there were some manufacturing bottlenecks through the pandemic, and I won't dwell on that. But I mean, you know, the community will have heard stories about Canutes that were ordered that took quite a while to arrive. I take it we're sort of well and truly through that now. So if you order a Canute, you know, it's being manufactured, distributors have got it, and people are going to get it pretty much straight away.
Yeah, it always takes us a few weeks to turn things around. And like a lot of companies, we have moments where suddenly a supplier just pulled the plug and said something which normally takes 3 days. Which is essentially building a machine, is now going to take 2 years. But we don't accept orders when we can't deliver them now, which means if you're ordering a machine, we'll be able to give you the machine and we can talk to you about it. So if you want to find out, I think I'm going to use this because I want to do this course, is this the right machine for me? You can call us up and have a discussion with us. We don't tend to do much of a sales job. We like to actually talk about why people are using Braille and whether the Canute is the right device. Sometimes people want certain customizations, and sometimes we can do that.
So if somebody wants to order either the Canute or the Canute console, where do they go?
You could go to bristolbraille.org. We have a shop online. We also have some lovely distributors. So depending on where you are, you might want to have an American distributor like AT Guys or Planted Dots or American Thermoform. There's a variety of distributors for different countries. If you don't see a distributor for your country, you can still order directly from us. And of course, you can try another distributor if you prefer. And if you are a distributor yourself or you work with someone, we're always happy to talk to someone in a country that we don't currently have distribution in. So if you're interested in the Canute console, that pre-order is something which is probably live by the time you're listening to this. And again, that's bristolbraille.org.
And the Canute console buy directly through you. You're not selling that through distributors at this point.
You can also buy that through our distributors, including people like Canadian Assistive Technology and all the ones I mentioned before. Some distributors will have stock, some won't, but most of our distributors are accepting orders for the Canute 360 and the Canute console.
And in terms of pricing, what are we looking at nowadays for the Canute and the Canute console?
The Canute console is just under £4,000, £3,995. That includes a Canute. The Canute, if you wanted to buy it on its own, is £2,500, £2,495. And that's direct from our shop. Of course, distributors in different countries will have their own retail prices set according to import and export reasons.
So, Ed, thank you for your time. This has been a wonderful interview. Is there anything else you wanted to say before we wrap up?
There's one more thing which I was going to mention. You asked where people can speak to us. We are actually opening up our workshop in a permanent open space for people to come and try Canute and to try different applications for it, to try before you buy or try without buying, or just try in order to tell us what you'd like to see changed. So our workshop is something you can come visit. If you go on our website, you can find our address. It's definitely worth giving us a call first. We'll be opening up at some point in the new year. We're in Bristol. We're quite near the main train station. So if you ever think you might be able to get to Bristol, then you by all means come and visit us, because Braille is often best experienced through touch.
Ed Rogers from Bristol Braille Technology CIC talking to us about the Knute 360 and the Knute console. You can find more information on the Bristol Braille website at www.bristolbraille.org. That's BRISTOLBRAILLE.org. We'll be putting a link to that website in the show notes, along with a couple of other things. First of all, the protocol for creating bookmarks on Knute 360, which Ed mentioned earlier on in the interview, has now been documented. We'll put a link to that documentation up in the show notes. And also, Bristol Braille Technology have now opened their workshop, which they're calling the Braille Invention Centre. And there's going to be a very exciting open demonstration of Knute 360 and Knute console at the Braille Invention Centre on Saturday, the 13th of April 2024. It's going to have a particular focus on Braille music. It's going to be hosted in collaboration with Sight and Sound Technology, and the organiser of that event is Stephanie Sargent from Vision Through Sound, and you can contact Steph for more information about that or to reserve a place. Places are free, and you might even get your travel expenses reimbursed if you live in the UK, so do contact Stephanie for more information about that. That is Stephanie, STEPHANIE, at visionthroughsound.co.uk. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Braillecast, the official podcast of the Braillists Foundation. You can find more Braille-related content by subscribing to Braillecast, all one word, in your podcast client of choice, or listening to Braillecast, connecting the dots for Braillists everywhere, on your smart speaker. You can also find past episodes on our website at braillecast.com. If you have comments on the podcast or suggestions of topics or guests for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. Please email help@braillists.org. You can also find the Braillists on Twitter at Braillists or on Facebook, facebook.com/Braillists Foundation. Finally, if you like what you've heard, spread the word. New listeners are always welcome, so if you know other people who are interested in Braille, please tell them where to find us. In the meantime, on behalf of everyone at the Braillists, thanks for listening, and bye for now. The costs of producing this episode were defrayed by a resilience grant from the Social Impact Fund of the Vision Foundation and Fight for Sight. For more information, visit visionfoundation.org.uk.